stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Welcome to episode 127 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us for another week. Thanks for downloading the show. Thanks for giving us a bit of your attention. Welcome to my co-host up in Canberra, Bradley Croker. How are you going?
Good, Brady. I'm just keeping the ball rolling.
Keeping the ball rolling. It's a bit darker this time of the year when we're recording this. Daylight savings ended yesterday.
Yeah, it certainly means that after work, I can't sort of dilly-dally around. I've got to get out before it gets dark.
I reckon you two blokes will start whinging about the weather in about 2.5-3 weeks' time. You'll start telling me how cold it is up in Canberra and down in Ballarat. That'd be right, Brad?
No, I love the cold weather.
Yeah, right. Julian Spence down in Ballarat, how you going?
Yeah, he loves the cold weather because it's nothing like the cold weather in Ballarat. No one likes the cold weather here. It's proper cold.
Here we go.
Had a few of their mornings already. Two degrees,
gloves on.
Feels like less and windy, raining. I went through my cupboard. I got a jacket out. And I'm like, why do I have so many fucking jackets? Surely I don't need this many jackets. And then end of the week, I'm like, oh, all my jackets are in the wash. I'm in trouble here.
You feel fit though when this weather changes. Like you've come out of the heat and you're like, oh, this long run feels a lot easier than it normally does.
No.
What are you talking about?
It's because all these other long runs feel hard, Moose, when he's fanging it during summer.
Yeah, just slow it down a couple of seconds, mate. They all feel good.
Yeah. We're drinking a Styx beer tonight, thanks to our Styx Brewery up in Newcastle. See, they were doing free delivery up there in Newcastle, so if you're around that area, make the most of that. Got a shipment the other day, boys, and I reckon it's the best shipment I've had so far. Got to try that new ginger pale ale. You boys enjoy that one?
Yeah, I've only got one left.
Yeah, it's going quick. Next time I have a request, I'm just going to ask for all of those ones because I reckon that's number one beer on the shelf up there at Styx at the moment, Moose.
I liked it. It's a funny taste, like not quite a ginger beer, but not a beer either, somewhere in the middle. Because I like ginger beer and I like beer, so I assume that I would like this. And I did. I enjoyed it.
They pulled you off, didn't they?
Were you first expecting it to be a bit more ginger beery, Moose?
I was expecting it to be more of a beer, actually.
Oh, okay. I was expecting it to be more the other way. And then as you said, it's right in that middle between the beer and the ginger beer.
Yeah. It's not quite sweet enough to be a ginger beer. Like, you know, they're real refreshing.
Yeah, it's actually a soft drink.
Yeah, it is. But this one, yeah, I like it. I liked it.
And they were like that on their marketing as well, like saying, like, this is not a ginger beer. Don't get confused. But it's, I've never tasted anything like it before. Pretty good mix up there. Check that out if you've got the funds to buy some beers. Moose, do you want to tell us? Actually, Brad, you tell me about your week this week because we always get behind time when Moose goes first. I've worked out the pattern. We get about 20 minutes in and we're like, yeah, and then we're going to have to rush through.
All right, I'll whip through. So Monday I did 45 minutes at 4:19. I got caught in a little bit of a storm. And then in the afternoon went out for 35 minutes at 4:04. Because the Sunday was quite quick, I decided that I was going to give myself 2 days recovery before doing a session. So Tuesday morning got out for an hour at 4:07. In the afternoon, 35 minutes at 4:02 with 5 15-second strides. And then Wednesday was my first session for the week. So, met Josh Johnson. And so the session that I wanted, so every couple of weeks, I want to do something that's just a bit quicker as if I was on the track, even though all the tracks are closed here at the moment. So the session was 3 sets of 2.5 minutes. So I run 2.5 minutes hard, give myself 90 seconds recovery, run 60 seconds hard, 90 seconds recovery, run another 60 seconds hard, and then give myself 2 minutes between the set. So if I was on the track, it would be basically run an 800, that sort of 5K effort, give yourself 90 seconds recovery, and then run 2 400s at sort of between 1500 and 3K pace. So sort of high end, but, you know, the recoveries are quite generous. So Session went pretty well. I ran average 252s to 255 kilometer pace for the 2:30 reps and 236 to 245 for the 60-second rep. So it certainly started to hurt, definitely the last 2.5 minute rep, and then the last 260s were pretty starting to get a little bit lactic in that. But that's the whole idea. Just trying to get a bit of turnover, feel like I'm back on the track again. So yes, happy with that one.
So it's like doing 3 800s, 6 400s in total.
Yeah, in total. But the recovery is pretty generous. You know, like when you're having 90 seconds and you're having then 2 minutes between the sets, and it's not, you know, you're not floating. It's pretty much doing whatever you want to do just to feel like you're recovering. But each set seems to get just that little bit harder because you put yourself into that sort of oxygen debt and you start to get a little bit lactic. So first set was fine.
I wouldn't call 90 seconds between like 400 meter reps in 64, 65 generous. I reckon that's what you need.
But you're only doing two of them, and then you get 2 minutes, and then you go back to a, you know, a slower pace.
I'm just trying to tell you, Brad, I was impressed with this session. You keep trying to play it down as if it wasn't that hard, but I think it was a good workout.
Yeah, I've done similar stuff to this on the track though, where I'd run 215 to 220 for the 800s, and then low 60s for the fours. So yeah, like I was doing them in the 4%, which for the 1 minute reps, probably a little bit too clunky, but it was great having Josh there as company. He was probably doing it pretty easy compared to me, but I'll try and do something. We ran the first two sets together, and then he definitely pulled away on the last sort of 800 meter rep and on the last 1 minute rep. So as he should, he's a 3:39 1500 guy and sub 8 minute 3K guy. So
3:39.
Yeah, and 7:57.
Yeah. When did he run that?
A while back. Yeah, have a look.
It was actually. Quick. I didn't know it was that quick. Didn't he get a World Juniors or something?
No, I went World Juniors for cross country. I think he ran 3:39 when Centro ran in Australia.
Oh, that was only like last year, wasn't it?
It was maybe 2 years ago. Yeah. So it was a good session. I'll try and do something similar to that every couple of weeks. So that was my real sort of quality session for the week. Thursday, I actually got out at sort of 11:30 in the morning, which was an unusual time for me to run. Did 90 minutes in the rain, 4:04s. Felt pretty good the second half of this run. Then Friday, 45 minutes in the morning at 4:11s, 35 minutes in the afternoon at 4:05s. And then on Saturday, I met Josh again at the AIS. And so the session this time around was 3 times 2K off a 2 minute float. I was umming and ahhing whether I'd do four of these or three, but it was pretty miserable. Like it was wet and a bit windy. My choice of shoes for this session wasn't great. I wore the New Balance Rebels or Fuel Cell Rebels, and the road surface at the AIS and the sole of those shoes, they just didn't agree very. I just couldn't get traction at all. I was slipping pretty much every step, which was a bit uncomfortable. Session went pretty well. Averaged 6:27 for the first 2K. 6:24 for the second and 6:16 for the third, and the 2 minute floats were at sort of 3:40 kilometer pace. So that was a 3:16 average for just over 17K. Could have done a fourth rep, but I just didn't. I thought, yeah, I'd sort of done enough. And then that afternoon, 36 minutes at 4:08, and then Sunday, solo. I wanted to go a little bit longer than what I'd been doing the previous weeks because I'm having an easy week this week. So I did 2:15 and got through 33.4 at 4:03s. And it's the best I've felt on a long run in quite a while. Just felt like I could keep going for another good half an hour. So 161K for the week. So I've been my biggest week in probably since like September last year, I reckon.
Very two threshold work, good long run, 100 miles.
I've got a question.
Yeah,
I've got a question too.
Your long run, you felt amazing. You ran 2:15, 4:03s. Why do you as soon as you get in a group, all of a sudden run 10 to 15 seconds a K quicker?
Because I obviously just get carried away. And
it's competitive, man.
No, not competitive. Like, I just, like, if they want to run at that pace, like, I do say, hey, I think we should slow it down a bit, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. So, if Josh came on here, he would tell you that the previous Sunday, where we averaged 3:53s for 2 hours, he was the one that was pushing the pace up until about 20. I reckon we got to about 24K, and we're going up this hill, and he's like, oh, I'm cooked now. And I'm like, well, what the fuck do you expect? You've been like hammering it. You're a middle distance runner. And now this is the bit where I can actually start to put you to the sword a little bit. So, so he was definitely pushing the pace on those runs.
And, Brad, sometimes you say you tick along on Sunday because you don't do a workout on the Saturday, whereas this Sunday is still ticked along pretty well off the back of a Saturday workout.
Yeah, but I think one advantage of having those two quicker long runs the previous 2 weeks was this felt easy. Like, I actually didn't feel in our some long runs, you feel like you start to get tired towards the end. I wasn't like that at all. I finished this one and went, I could easily just keep going. So perceived effort was quite low.
Jeez, up and about, Moose, isn't he?
Oh,
how the hell did this happen?
Up and about for 3 weeks now. I've never seen it. I feel for Viv at home, actually.
I'm having an easy week this week, and then I'm going to start bringing in that old structure that I used to have where I sort of have – maybe a week at 160, bring it back to 140, go to 170, and then have a recovery week at 120, 130, and sort of vary the long run. So I'll have one long run a month that's maybe 2.5 hours, one that's 2:15, one that's 2, and one that's 1:45, but just fluctuate it all a bit. Have, I don't know, like a quality sort of track. So a session where I'm working at sort of 1500 to 5K pace every couple of weeks. So just sort of covering all bases without burying myself until we know when we can start racing again.
And the body's fine? Like, you feel good?
Other than my Achilles, they just take a while to warm up, but I don't have any pain while I'm running. So yesterday's long run, the first 6K, I'm like, it's not, it didn't feel comfortable, but then after 6K, I don't feel it. So, and like, I've had this stuff for 10 plus years, my Achilles, I hobble out of bed, but I've spoken to a lot of people about it, and they say that if it doesn't hurt to run, then it's fine. So it warms up, but that's why I try and avoid morning sessions at the moment, just because my body's just better in the afternoons.
Just have those UFOS next to your bed as well. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I've been doing that.
Straight into them. The other question, Brad, last week we got off air and I set you a challenge, also referred to as the Trailful Challenge, that you do 15 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. You didn't do that.
No, and to quite be disappointed. Fair, to be fair, the first I heard about that was actually you mentioning it on the show. So I'd already committed to that session, that first session with Josh. And there's no way I could do another, because the session that you prescribed, you know, the floats weren't super quick, which meant that for me to do that session, I'd have to absolutely nail the 1 minute reps. And it was just too similar to what I did on the Wednesday. I just needed something that was more threshold, and I would have just been stupid to have done it. So that's why I didn't do it.
It's funny how you mention you need, I need this, I need that. Where that's a good way to think, because at the moment people are just doing shit because they want to. Whereas you're like still in the mindset, oh, I need to do this and I need to do that. It's something like that's rare at the moment for people to look at it that way.
Yeah, well, there's two parts to that. One is I don't want to get injured again. And any smart coach out there, or if somebody was coaching me right now and I said, hey, I've done this session on the Wednesday of 64-second 400s and now should I go and bang out 15 400s again off a slower recovery? No coach would say to do that. So why am I going to do it just for a podcast? I don't want to get injured. And the reason why I then say I want to do this, this, and this is I just feel like I stay more motivated when I have a structure, and I just pretend that everything's normal, even though I don't have a race. But I still find comfort in having structure in my training rather than just going, just doing things for the sake of it because there are no races on. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah. I agree with you as well. Yeah, it was too similar to the session you did earlier in the week. Just some bad time and that's all. We'll have another opportunity, listeners.
Yep.
Wasn't angry, Brad, just a bit disappointed, that's all.
Well, since when have you and my coach telling us what sessions to do, Brady?
A lot of people did it. Got a lot of people on Instagram sliding in. Nick Earl had a go, just took me down.
I heard you got towed up by a few people, actually.
Yeah, a few blokes went out there and did 9.5K time trials. Exactly.
Well, it was always going to happen.
Had to disqualify Josh Maisie and Nick Earl. I think I'm still the best, though.
I at least told you very early on that I wasn't going to do it, whereas somebody else on this show said he was going to do it on Saturday, but I'm just scrolling through his Strava now and it doesn't look to be 15 times a minute.
I'm going to cut him some slack though, Brad, because I think he was pacing his wife who was going for a 10K personal best. Is that correct, Julian?
That's what happened in the end, but my body's been shit at the moment. So
tell us about it.
Yeah, just feels gross. Like, I think I'm getting that osteitis pubis back. So, like, groin and hips are all jammed up. Adductors real tight through the lower back as well. It's not ideal for running fast. And I just had no motivation to get into that session. I really wanted to do it. Like, I wanted to do it. But then I got, like, it was pissing rain. And I get there, I'm, like, real tight. And I thought, oh, Bree's going to be running 10K. I jump in. See how she goes. It might help her, that's for sure.
And it actually is your workout. Like, you said it for me, I did it, and then I got a bit cocky on the show last week challenging you guys to do it. Like, it's not my fault. Like, I saw that popping in a couple of times, but nah, this is a Moose's workout, not mine.
Oh, it's fucking 1 minute on, 1 minute off. I just made it. I'm not going to claim it.
Claim it, Moose. Claim it.
Yeah, anyway.
Maybe Moose, if you say, like, if you do 13 reps or, like, 17 reps, this obscure number, then you could call it Moose's session, I suppose. But 10 or 15 is pretty common.
You see it a bit. You see it in Kenya a lot, actually, the 1 minute on, 1 minute off. Anyway, yeah, Monday morning, I got two runs in. The first one, 8:43, I ran late. Dang. Late that morning. Went up Cemetery Loop back home. Next morning. No, that evening, got home from work late. I think we recorded the podcast that night, so I had to get out for a real short run. Went in and just ran around this Black Hill mountain bike park. So there's like this downhill mountain bike course and really cool trails. And I tell you, 23 minutes in there, it's not an easy 23 minutes, but it's fun. Really enjoyed it. 23 was all I needed to get out that night. Next morning, beautiful mornings during this week. I don't know whether you guys got them, but like crisp, sunny, not windy, just really nice runs. Went the Moose Loop in reverse, so that was a novelty. Next, that evening, went out for a run. Got a new headlamp. It's headlamp season, by the way. Some good technology out there at the moment. Hit us up. Didn't need to use it just yet. Next morning, actually did a workout the next morning. I went and ran Dolce's Hill Loop. So I got a mate in Ballarat. Dolce, you know him, Brady. You run with him before?
Yeah, he came up here once. Did a long run with him. Smoked me.
Yeah. Wouldn't smoke you anymore. He's not Jason. Real quick at the moment. Yeah, but he's got a hill loop. We've all got our hill loops in Ballarat where we like to claim as our own. This one's his. Runs through like Ballarat East, Brown Hill area. I wanted to get the course. Like, I thought, fuck it, I need to get out there and do something. So I wanted to go get the course record on it. I had it already, but I could see Watto was sniffing around it. He's had a few cracks at it lately. So just wanted to put it out of reach a little bit further for that little short little man. And yeah, I kind of cooked myself, recovered. So the loop runs on this real false flat. So if you have a look at the elevation profile over the first 2.5K, it climbs like 50 meters or more. And that's a fair bit, but you don't realize it at the time. It feels flat because you're on a road. And I just went out too hard and I felt real shit at like 3K, you hit a hill and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a long day. And then you get to Gracefields Road, this section at, well, when's the start of that climb? Start of that climb's at
4K.
Yeah, 3K, 4K, and it just goes on and off. Like, I was going backwards at the top. But then it's downhill for like the rest of it. So I kind of got a bit of groove back and ended up running 33.02 for the 10K. And that took the course record on Strava. So happy about that. Felt beat up after that, like proper sore. You know, when you run, when you run a hilly race and your quads are sore and your glutes are sore, it kind of screwed me for the rest of the week, actually.
Isn't that funny, Moose? These hilly tempos, you put it on Strava and everyone would be like, oh, Moose is taking it pretty easy today. He's, pretty ordinary run, but it doesn't look great on Strava, but they're almost the hardest sessions you can do.
That was race effort right there. That was. I'm not sure I could have gone quicker in a race.
What was the gap on it, Brad? You had opened?
Yep, it was 3:12.
Yeah, so still not that impressive.
Yeah.
Well, you would know, Brady. You've never run over hills.
Yeah. But it's looking forward to cross country. Real looking forward to cross country season where I can. I hope we get a cross country.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you think we get any?
I don't think we get a cross country. I don't think so. But maybe a local one. Maybe we see the Chase Suffering come back or something like that. Anyway, so that evening. Oh, so golf course is shut. Fucking beautiful. So they shut golf courses to golfing, and now they're filled with people running and walking on them. So I went and parked up, ran around the golf course. Oh, so nice. Midlands, pretty flat as well. All, like, it's the best I've ever seen, this course. It's in Great Nick, so fairway is nice and soft. Got 8K in up there. Next morning, was feeling sore from this long run. And the weather, shit, felt shit, didn't want to do it, but got out, did it. That afternoon, drove back up to the golf course and did not enjoy the golf course run that night. Forgot my earbuds. Nothing boring, more boring than a flat golf course with nothing to listen to or talk, no one to talk to. Friday was pretty average, just got out 10K actually. I'm not sure what happened there, but. That was all I could do.
Back to the golf course though, Moose. Are they letting people use it for exercise or are you guys just jumping fences?
Oh, this is like a public golf course. So, public? What's the difference between a public and a private course?
One you have to be a member for. I got in trouble thinking about what's the difference between stuff last week when I was talking about mammals, fish and birds and stuff.
So yeah.
I'm not 100% sure, but I assume that the public can play on it if you pay, whereas a private one you have to be a member to play it.
Okay, this is a very public course. I run on there even when there are people playing. So it's fine. And it's actually quite good. In summer, it turns into like a dust pit. And then in winter, normally it turns into a sloshy swamp. So at the moment, it's okay. Then on Saturday morning, yeah, it was fucked. The weather was so shit. It was like 1 degree, pissing rain, windy. And we had this Run Strong online coaching virtual 10K. And so I went down and did it with Bree, ran with Bree. She actually crushed it. It was amazing to see people get up for this. Like, we had about 60 people run it. And I would say 70% ran we'll call it an unofficial PB. And, I don't know how they did it. Got up, like, to get a race effort in with the weather that bad, with no real races going on. So we ran around this loop, the crit track, 1,200 metres. 1250 it is, the loop, so within regulation. I made that rule just for this crit track, actually. Tweaked the regulations to fit it in. Bree, she was good. She ran a negative split. That's awesome. To run the negative split in a time trial, fuck, real good. Only like a minute and something off her PB. So, yep, she was stoked. Have you ever run with your partner when they start struggling? You don't want to get in their way or you don't want to say anything that they don't agree with.
Just keep it's a bit of a touchy shut.
Time. Yeah, that's right. Just shut the fuck up. Get out of the way.
Viv abused me once when I paced her at park run. She was obviously really hurting and I'm like trying to encourage her, saying, come on, come on. She's like, I'm not a fucking dog. She was not happy. Wait, all right, I'm not facing you anymore.
No, not a good idea. Once a year is enough, I think. Once a year. I got yelled at from behind when, like, for nine of the... No, there were eight loops. For seven of the loops, I was putting a little gap in between her and me. And then on the last lap, I must have slowed down a little bit. She screams at me, "Speed up!" All right, shit. Maybe go faster earlier, woman. Anyway, that was good. Next morning, solo 26.8K run through the bush. Average 401s. This was faster than you, Brad.
Yeah, yeah.
I reckon I climbed more than you too, did I?
400. Yeah, but you only ran 26K.
Oh, yeah.
489. Mind you, we know how dodgy your watch is.
Yeah, it's true.
You had similar attitude in Melbourne.
489's pretty good.
Yeah. I was at 400 and something, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I've got to look at that Garmin file. But that it was good. I listened to Zach Newman on the Friends of the Show podcast. Has that come out yet?
Yeah, yeah.
You mean on Patreon, has it come out?
On Patreon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I put them out as soon as I record those ones.
Oh, yeah. He was good, Zach, talking about it.
What about Storm that come through, though? Did you hear that?
Oh, I did hear that. That was wild.
Yeah, that stuff with the mic a bit. How come you didn't listen to one I did with Bree?
Oh, I hear her every fucking day. I know her story.
Yeah,
anyway.
We didn't get into that. We've got to do part two because we just got to the stage in life where you two met when you were her boss, her manager.
Oh, the big dog.
That's 55 minutes in and we just stopped it there, to be continued.
Yeah, no, probably don't play. There'd probably be some fair work issues there.
I was thinking the same thing when she told me that.
Workplace health and safety.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that's it. Yeah, that was my week. I was happy to get out like 130 something, I think, 140 maybe. That was good for me because I really wasn't feeling it. It's crazy the ups and downs you're getting at the moment mentally. It's a roller coaster. This situation we're in, there's a few periods this week or a few moments where the reality of how long this actually might take to come through hits, and then like it's like a big slap in the face and you think, oh shit, we're day to day. Like, it's really hard to live day to day not knowing what's going to happen more than a week away. Mm-hmm. Like, for a business it is, for a runner, for me as a runner it really is. So I'm just like, you're going through crazy patches of being in a good mood and then being real unsure, unpredictable, like kind of messes with your head a bit. And I think one thing I was thinking on my run tonight, I'm like, there's a lot of people in some real weird spots at the moment. And I think if someone gets in like a mood or someone's a bit like short with you, or it's probably a good chance to practice your tolerance and your patience, because there's lots of people that we might think are coping with this fine when it's really fucking with their head. And it's, yeah, a good chance to just step back and maybe let a few things slide that you wouldn't normally.
Moose, would you consider on a running front, would you consider getting a coach for this period and just letting somebody else write your program?
Yeah, I probably should. Just saying before what Brad was talking about, I'm like, oh yeah, I could do with someone telling me what to do right now.
Mm. Yeah, there you go, Brad. You might get a job out of this.
Yeah, we'll see.
So what do you recommend?
It's hard for you.
Mm. I'm open. Yeah,
I'm writing my own programs, but I'm actually enjoying. I'm enjoying just playing around with it, but I definitely need some structure, because if I didn't, or I didn't have some sort of plan, I'd lose motivation pretty quick. So, I don't know.
Wait, does Shane Nankervis write programs down there?
I think he's tried to coach.
Oh yeah,
both Nick Van Raphorst and Skillsy.
Hasn't worked.
What about Mona?
Yeah, Mona floats around, but me and Mona, we have differences of opinion on lots of training philosophy things. I will struggle with a coach, I tell you right now. When you're a know-it-all, it's really hard to listen to other people. But I hit up my mate on Instagram. He said he thought I was joking when I asked him to coach me. My mate Mitch put out this call. He's like, I want to start coaching some people. I said, do me. And he laughed. I'm like, oh, okay.
Who the hell is Mitch?
Mitch Larkin, his name is. He works at the running company in Clifton Hill. Huh. And the reason that I asked him was because I don't know anything about his take on running or his philosophy. And so it would be great to have a real fresh influence on my running, and even just to learn from someone who, I don't know, does things really differently, even though I don't know him or what he's about, just be interesting.
He's got experience and stuff though, hasn't he?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Has he ran himself?
He runs a bit, yeah. I don't think he's not like a great runner or anything, but he seems like a smart kid. Real cool dude though. The coolest dude, has the tattoos, has this real girly haircut, wears crazy boots like Doc Martens and that.
Coach Mitch.
I reckon though, like having a bit of downtime, like coming off, you know, you're gearing up for a potential crack at the Olympics. So, you know, clearly your motivation is going to be low in this sort of short-term period. So I think as long as you're ticking along, you know, being consistent, I think it's a good thing at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. I think if I'm hitting 130K a week, and that's all right. All I need is that little spark to come. To be honest, the reality is October races, I think at the moment, are 50-50 or even less of a chance to go ahead just based on how things are right now. So I'm not going to get too invested in this October thing, but
yeah.
I'm
only training, I guess, properly now because I haven't been able to do it for the last year. So I'm like, well, I haven't missed training, but I haven't been able to train properly for over a year. So I'm just enjoying getting back into feeling, you know, how it used to feel. So my motivation's reasonably high, I suppose, because of the last year and a half that I've had.
I can't believe you blokes smack these sessions out like you are. I think I sent a message during the week. I'm like, you blokes are fucking killing it. How you can run that fast in workouts right now, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I think when you do a lot of stuff by yourself as well, like not much has changed for us. Like Brad, you always just used to chip away solo anyway. It's probably got easier for you now having Josh Johnson.
Yeah, it's been good having it's certainly easier to get through the sessions. And it's funny how when he pulls away from you, like I feel like I'll start a rep thinking that I can't run any faster, and then he sort of just gaps me, and you sort of just use him as the yardstick, and you automatically just start running faster, even though you know you hadn't planned to. So it's been good having him there, sort of drag me through. But I certainly don't need him to drag me through every single long run at 350s.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'll tell you about my week, eh? Keep moving.
Do it.
Monday, 16K, easy at 4:28 pace in the morning, 8K easy in the afternoon at 4:35s. I kind of moved my whole week around because I wanted to have a bit of a hit out on the Friday. So I moved my threshold session to the Tuesday. The workout was 5x5 minutes at 3:10 pace. Just did them on this sandy path around like our showgrounds, old trotting track kind of thing, kind of just this, yeah, loose gravel, probably not the fastest surface in the world, but it was good for some threshold work. 2 minutes jog in between those 5 minutes, so that was a good workout. Ended up doing 9.9k at 3:20k pace, and then I did 7k easy in the afternoon at 4:30 pace. On the Wednesday, I did 14K in the morning at 4:31 pace, and then 8K in the afternoon at 4:28 pace. Thursday, pretty easy day, did 12K and 5, like 20-second strides in the morning, all up that averaged 4:18 pace. Listened to Road to New York. That was a bit of a train wreck, Moose.
Road to Nowhere. Yeah,
I've got R2.
And they have lost their shit.
Well, you have lost your shit. You just come out swinging, and it just turns into an argument the whole time.
Nah.
You're done on that show.
Yeah, I'm done. That show's done. Let's clean it.
You and Ali were just about to go punch-ons at the end there about how many people you can run with. Anyway.
I was right, though. You know that I found that. That was an official document from the Victorian government.
Yeah, but no one knew that document. Like,
I know, but that doesn't make it. That doesn't make it not right.
Yeah, I thought you were hard on her, but anyway, I did 20 minutes in the afternoon Thursday, a bit of a shakeout at 4:42 pace, and then Friday I did a 10K time trial. I wanted to do something because this was Rotterdam Marathon weekend. Wanted to do something for a number of reasons, like A, to test the training. Like obviously Moose had taken over my programming and I kind of did the marathon work and didn't get to race. So I just wanted to see how fit I was going to be. I wanted to test out the Alphafly shoes. And I also just wanted to just get to that extra level of hurt that you probably don't get to in workouts. So yeah, went out to this. I didn't want to do it out the industrial estate because no matter what I ran out there, you guys would have been giving me shit for it. So I thought I wanted to find another location. On Thursday, I was jogging around this kind of like housing estate, Cabernet Drive, just like, yeah, real rich people live out there. Every house is probably worth like $1 million. But it kind of, if you look, at the map on, Strava, yeah, it kind of has one tighter turn, but then the rest of it kind of just bends slowly around. So it was a 950-meter loop. Measured it on the watch, measured it with the wheel, measured it with the bike speedo, measured it with Archie's watch, and measured it with Glenn's watch as well. And I also did that like map my run thing on it. Pretty much everything made it come out at 950 meters. So I thought I'll do 10 laps of that, and then I got the wheel out and measured another 500 meters, put a cone down, and that was going to be my 10K. So met Archie out there. He wanted to do 5K, so the plan was that he'd be able to run a sub 15-minute 5K, and then because we can only train with one person at the moment, Glenn would jump in on the bike for the last 5K after Archie was finished. So that worked well. We're a bit slow early, actually. I put the Alpha Flyers on after we kind of warmed up and did some strides in them, and like just, yeah, it's hard to explain the feeling that you get in the midfoot there. Like I feel like the heel is pretty similar. Like obviously the stack height's a bit higher, but pretty similar feeling to what the next percent is. But through the front, it's kind of like you're not sure what to do with it almost, like where you're meant to put your energy. So I did a couple of strides and thought, this is going to be a quick day. We're going to run this first K in like 2:55 and probably have to put the brakes on. But it was actually the opposite. We kind of went through the first K in 3:03, like felt relaxing, but kind of had to work a bit harder than I thought we might have in those shoes to get the Ks down to 3 minutes and a bit quicker. I felt really good. And I think they're going to be an awesome shoe for like stuff at 3:05, 3:10, 3:15 kind of pace. But yeah, I was surprised that I had to really get on my toes a bit more to kind of get the pace down to 3 minutes. Went through 5K in 15:01. Archie kind of put a few seconds into me in his last K. He went through in 14:49. And then Glenn just got on the bike and I just got on the back wheel. And yeah, ran the last 5K in like, it was 2:59, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 2:58, 2:53. Ran 29:56 going by the watch. It could be over, could be under, not sure. Don't care, Bradley. Bradley's been getting into me about this not being legit, but it's just a yardstick for me. I might go out there once a month, put the cone down in the same spot and just see how I'm tracking. But yeah, it was good. Probably didn't quite get to that hurt level where it felt like a race. Like I think because you're not actually racing anyone, it just felt like a really hard workout. Kind of went through a bit of a bad patch in between like 5 and 7K. But because we were doing these 950 loops, I just thought I've just got to do another one and do another one and do another one and then kick it home. So that was good. Did 5K cool down after that. 7K easy in the afternoon at 4:31. Saturday recovery day, 13K at 4:33. Super windy as well. I'm glad I chose to do that on Friday and not Saturday. And then easy 30K, pretty much just an out and back on the back roads in Moama out to the Denny Highway at 4:08K pace for 30K, which gave me 161K for the week.
All right. All right, come back. Talk us through this race that you did. So what did you think you were going to run going in?
Yeah, I told the boys I wanted to run like right under 30 minutes. Like that was the plan. I'm like, oh, I reckon I can run sub 30. I reckon I'm pretty fit. I reckon the marathon stuff in the legs, plus like the sharper stuff I've been doing since Rotterdam got called off the last 3 weeks. And like you put all that on top of running 29:34 at Zatopek. So I think it's pretty accurate. You look at the way my pace kind of is similar on Strava and the way I felt, like I don't think it's a surprise that I could run sub 30 on a perfect day with a bike and pretty much a pacemaker for 5K in the Alpha Flies. Like, this was everything perfectly there.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think I've leveled up since back in the day as well. Like, what I've done the last 6 months is a different version of myself.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think Zach has sent me a message. He's like, oh, I have a listen to Brady over there talking about his 10K. I'm like, what are you talking about? What 10K? And then I looked and I was like, oh, fucking hell. Here we go.
I told you I was going to do something though, didn't I?
I don't think you told me.
Remember I told you I might do something later in the week because it was going to be Rotterdam weekend? You might do something later in the week.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And then I didn't know it was your coaching like company's virtual run as well. So that caused a bit of confusion with a few people because I'd gone a day early.
Well, that's why I gave you shit, because I thought you were doing it as part of the Run Strong 10K race. And I looked at the rules, and the rules were no loop shorter than a kilometre. And I'm like, well, you haven't met that criteria.
Just first criteria. Nah, we got our run to PB one coming up, Brad. That's when I'll be putting it on the line.
You take an idea of ours.
Mate, you did not invent virtual runs. Give me I've seen a million of these things in the last 2 weeks.
Talk about run the PB virtual run then.
Well, we actually got it this Easter weekend. So because we do personalised programs, it doesn't work if we set it all on the one day for people. So we got some like firefighters and nurses and doctors and stuff like that. So we just got to personalise. So it depends 10K? On who you are.
That's 10K?
What day? 5K we're doing. 5K.
Oh, yeah. Got to change it somehow.
Yeah, so exactly the same thing. You can do whatever you want. We won't be checking your loops and stuff like that. We won't be the fun police on this stuff.
I got two questions for you, Brady. The first one, just looking at the way that you paced it and your goal was sub 30, when you got to 8K, knowing that you then closed 258, 253, were your like two laps sort of just like high-fiving the guy on the bike going, yeah, I've got this in the bag? Or you with 2K to go, you thought, oh, I'm not sure whether I'm going to hang on here?
No, I actually thought, so after like we went through in 15 minutes and then the guy on the bike, I thought it actually picked up a bit more time. And I'm not exactly sure, those splits I read out were from Strava, but I think if you actually check the laps on my watch, I reckon there might be like most of the 3 minute ones might be actually 2:59s or 2:58. You know, it measures a bit different when you have that 1K lap split thing on. So I actually thought I was probably going to run 29:45. And then when we got to, I was feeling pretty good at 8 and 9K. Like, I was actually thinking that he'd backed off and stuffed up the kind of timing a bit. Like, I'm like, oh, we're going a bit too slow here. But it probably shows the shoes as well. Like, just they weren't beating up my feet. And, my legs felt pretty fresh at that stage. And then I just thought, well, I'll just punch this last K as quick as we can, just because I wanted to see what it felt like kind of really working hard in those shoes and getting on my toes. So, it was more of a just get it all out here, let's see what you've got left, rather than, you know, you've got to hammer this home. And my watch got me at, like, 29:54 as well, and then when I uploaded it, chucked another 2 seconds onto it, the old Strava tax. But anyway.
And second question was, like, you don't sound completely sold on the shoes. Like, you know, it's not like you jumped on here tonight and you went, they're amazing.
No, I reckon if I had my time again, say if I do a 10K in a month's time, I reckon I'll wear the next percent for it. But then I think this is going to be more a half marathon or marathon shoe. Like, I think you're going to feel really cruisy at like 305, 310, my kind of half marathon pace. And then I think marathon pace, like 315, 320 for me, is going to feel real. I think you're going to be really relaxed running that pace in them.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think they're as aggressive as the next percent. As I said, like off the line, I'm like, we're like, because we always go hard, and Archie's pretty aggressive as well. And we kind of were, you know, I was kind of on the foam roll that morning and listening to gangster rap and kind of trying to pump ourselves up for this. And we kind of met out there in the dark, and we kind of made the pact that if things weren't going well, we're still going to run the whole, well, I was still going to run the whole 10K, and I wasn't just going to pull out when things were, you know, you can do that easy in a time trial. So, yeah, we were kind of getting ourselves up, and then, yeah, I was surprised that I couldn't hit a quicker K straight off it.
Mm-hmm. That's what you were saying last week, Moose, about the shoes not being as good when you're trying to run fast.
Yeah, well, they're a bigger shoe. They're a little heavier, and I don't think that they are, like, fully designed for that for that shorter distance running. This is a marathoning shoe. It's all about efficiency and economy late. And that's where it's going to come into its own. Pity we don't have any of those workouts coming up to actually test them.
And I sort of noticed, so today I went for a run. I've got a few pairs of the old Streak Sixes stockpiled. So they were the marathon shoe before the 4% came out. And I wore them out at Mulligan's today, and I'm just like, oh my God, like there is no real cushioning in this shoe at all. So looking at the way that the marathon technology or the technology in the marathon shoes now, you can see that the value is really in just protecting your legs, I reckon, more than anything in those shoes. Because I ran 8K in those Streak Sixes today, and I'm just like, shit, these would bang up my legs big time if I did like a 10K hard in them.
Wait, it's a Monday. Why are you running in a Streak Six?
Oh, because I just wanted a light trainer to do some of my heel strides in at the end.
How do you think he averages 405s on easy runs?
But just the feel of it. Like, there's just no cushioning in that shoe whatsoever. And that was the go-to marathon shoe.
It was. That was the shoe that had the inner soles flopping out the sides.
That's the one. Kipchoge,
Berlin.
Yeah.
Thanks to Patreon supporters, fellas.
Yep.
I just changed some colours here, Moose. I did have you down for another one, but I made a mistake today when I was putting this in there. So if you thought you were thanking Heidi, you weren't.
Okay,
I'm thanking Heidi Edmiston from Shepparton, just down the road from Echukamo. I'm a Heidi, not far
what
from
What do you like about Heidi? What did you take, Heidi?
I think you like something about Joe later on, her Boston Marathon story. And I think that's a cool story that you can share.
All right.
That's more of that. And Heidi lives near me as well, so that suits me better to talk about Heidi. She's from Shepparton, enjoys the beach, going by her Strava photos, gets out on the bike a bit as well to do some road riding over there in Shepparton. Not many hills around Shep, pretty similar to Echuca, so it'd be a good place to ride fast. Done some crazy trail races. Well, I don't know if they're races or runs down in Tassie. Some like extreme stuff. I'd never seen some of these kind of Strava kind of maps and stuff before, so that was pretty insane looking at some of that stuff. Heidi, 23 minutes for 5K and 50 minutes for 10K. That's just going off her best Strava estimated best efforts, though. So thanks for your support, Heidi, of the Inside Running Podcast. Brad, who you got?
Well, I've got Dan Wilson. Now, Brady, doing your research, this was possibly the ex-pro triathlete Dan Wilson from Brisbane, who's run 8:39, 14:45, and 13:10, but that is not the case.
No, you've confused that, Brad. So I thought it was a pro triathlete from I don't know where that guy's from, but you're a mutual friends with him on Strava. On Facebook. You know him?
Yeah. So when he was when I was living at the AIS, he was down on a few camps.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not that guy. And there's also.
Yeah, you know how we know it's not that guy?
And there's also,
every ex-pro triathlete that I know is the biggest tight ass that you'll ever meet in your life. They would never shell out for Patreon.
And there's also a Dan Wilson who was in Brisbane who's run those times that you just quoted as well. And it's not that guy either. And I actually had to email Dan and just be like, Dan, who are you? Like, you got to be one of these two guys. And he's not, but he is, Blake Hose knows him. And he turns out he's from Geelong, this guy. Tell us the rest, Brad.
So he's from Geelong, and he's just trying to get tips to run faster than his kids for as long as possible. So thanks for your support, Dan.
Used to ride bikes too. Now he runs.
So this is my time to shine, right?
Yeah, this is an interesting one.
Joe Burke Martignoni from Neuruss in Freiburg, Switzerland. It sounded like an Italian name from a French town in a Swiss country. So Joe Burke Martignoni ran 18:41 for 5K, 37:55, 10, 1:11:09. That's fast. That's the highlight. And 253 Boston 2018 finished 20th. Oh, that was the shit year. That's the Desi Linden year.
Yeah.
Yuki Kawachi year. It was like sub-zero feels like temperatures, windy, raining, sideways wind. It was awful that year. So she came 20th. Holy shit, that's big deal. And she ran 256 at Valencia last year, also ran Zurich, Frankfurt, Geneva, London Marathon, and Boston. So Joanna Burke Martignoni clocked the third fastest Masters time at Boston. That 2018 Boston for $2,500. Whoa.
USD, yeah, she got the prize money.
You know, only the tough runners survived that day.
Mm. Yeah, you know how many elites she would have beaten that day? Like, oh, just yeah. Like 222 girls.
Well, you watch that, you watch the men running through them, and they go past, like, that guy, that Kenyan, Karui, when he was in the lead, I think it was. Well, he passes Molly Huddle, Shalane, all these top Americans, and they are jogging. 420s sort of stuff, jogging. You know, it was a hard day, and I don't think those. Did they even finish those three? Those two?
Not sure.
Yeah.
Couldn't anyway. Tell you. Thanks, Joe, for your support all the way over in Switzerland. Thanks to our Patreon supporters.
Good runner.
Yeah, isn't she? She could be the best.
Top 20
at Boston.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Bit of running news here. Brad, just for you, actually, you were asking this question last week about major championships clashing going forward. It turns out the summer of 2022, we could see the World Championships, the European Championships, and the Commonwealth Games all in that same period. I think there was talk there that the three championships in a six-week period could give athletes a chance at a gold medal hat-trick, Sebastian Coe said. If they were to arrange the schedule, so tripling is an option, at least for non-distance athletes. So that could be three different teams of we don't send marathoners to the European champs, but yeah, one of them's going to take a bit of a toll, aren't they?
So well, there's some motivation for you, Moose.
What I'm seeing here as well is who wants a paycheck versus who wants a national singlet. Or an international Australian singlet. Because if you've got all these professional runners who have gone a year without being able to cash in for any money at all, those boys and girls, they're going to need some cashola. They're going to need some paychecks coming at them. And they're not going to get them at World Champs or Commonwealth Games. They're going to get them at London's, Berlin's, Boston's, whatever. And so I think there's going to be some decision-making come next year for those guys.
Do you get paid at World Champs, though, if you win?
No, there's no one from Australia winning world champs.
Yeah, but I know that. But like, do the top dogs like no, Caesar? Did he get paid?
I think you do. If you win a world championship, world athletics, you'll pay. You do get prize money.
Nowhere near what you'd get for winning like in New York or something, though, would it?
No.
That's right. And it's not just winning; it's appearance money. So you like these guys are going to not get paid to go to the world. Champs like by their whatever their country they might get if they're on NAS funding they might get a little help but it's certainly not what a appearance fee could be at a big race.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, like Kenyan Commonwealth Games team.
So top Aussies, Moose, would they choose a World Championships Com Games or a big city marathon?
I can't speak for them personally, but you can probably look at their situation and think, oh, like Liam, he works, he has a wage already. Yeah. And then perhaps like, let's say Jack Rayner goes, oh, well, I could get 30 grand running London or I could get nothing running Com Games. Maybe if they're going to clash, I'd pick the London and actually be able to support myself financially. I'm not speaking for them, but that's one particular situation they find themselves in.
But this is, this is in the summer, isn't it? Don't the Com Games happen? Not the spring or the autumn where the majors happen?
Yeah, it always seems to do that. But, I mean...
Hard to do both still, though.
It depends how they haven't given us a date yet, so we don't know exactly. And you know marathoning, you can't... Like, it's really difficult to bridge them all together like that.
Yeah.
If you want to have a proper crack at them, you want to do it... you want to give yourself the spacing.
Yeah, for sure. Other bit of news, Kenyan former marathon world record holder Wilson Kipsang arrested for drinking in I-10 while breaking coronavirus curfew laws. A group of nearly 20 people was found drinking in a popular club at 9 p.m, breaking the 7 p.m. curfew that is currently in effect due to the coronavirus pandemic. Police said the group resisted arrest, forcing them to call for reinforcement. Wilson.
This is so good. I fucking love these Kenyan guys who are like the best runners in the world that are also just like the boys, like getting on the piece.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great 12 months or so for old Wilson, has it?
Oh, yeah, I don't love him for that doping
reason. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, like, these guys go off the rails. They don't just, like, fall back into society and put their head down. They're like, nah, fuck it. Aspel Kiprop, I'm going to go take videos of me, like, with my ex-training partner's wife in my car, like, basically, like, getting it on in the car. Then we're going to... Sammy Wanjiru, fuck. I mean, yeah. Sad story, but, you know, he was a drunk. He fell off his balcony, jumped off, whatever. We don't really know when he was pissed.
Isn't Kiprop going into motor racing now?
I saw some.
Is he?
Yeah. So some article came out about him now taking up, becoming a race car driver.
Oh, they really go off the rails. It's fantastic.
But then you just got Kipchoge, who just does everything right, and he's just straight down the line and just like the perfect model of an athlete.
At the moment. I don't know. He's starting to break the mold a bit with that photo shoot.
Was pretty funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's getting bad boy. I like it.
Yeah. Had some good swag in those photos. Listen to the question, Brad.
Which one?
Whichever one you want. I said to Elizabeth today with this one, I don't even know if we can answer this. We'll probably stuff this up. Try that one then, maybe go with Jay.
Yeah. Hey, guys, just wondering, with the postponement of the Olympics, allowing for another Australian Nationals to be held within the time frame, does that mean more athletes can qualify by winning national championships for their events? And would it affect those who have already qualified for the 10 and 5K, like Jess Harlan, Stewie? That's a really good question, and it will only really affect the people that have run a national. So we've run the 5K national championship, and we've run the 10K, but for all the other events, we didn't run, you know, a 1500 or an 800, and we're not going to run one this year. So Nationals has been postponed, but for the 5 and 10, like it's at Zatopek next year, can somebody come out, win Zatopek, run the qualifying time and be automatic as well as Stewie? It's an interesting question. Thoughts?
Well, didn't the World Athletics come out and state that those who have already qualified will remain qualified?
Yeah, but can another person qualify the same way? They haven't announced anything about that yet. Jess isn't saying that Stewie doesn't remain qualified, but can somebody else qualify in the same way by winning the national champs?
Yeah. That's a good question. I have no idea. I don't think they have an idea about that yet.
No, but you'd have to think if somebody wins Zatopek and runs the Olympic standard, they're going to make the team. There's not that many guys that are going to be able to just do that. So I'd say that, yeah, they'll be on the team. Anybody that wins the Nationals and gets the time for both the 10 and the 5.
If you're running the standard in the 10, you're in the team. Doesn't matter what you come as out of there.
Pretty much breaking the Australian record for the 10.
Yeah.
And the women's 5K is pretty, is that 15:03 or something like that, 05? Jessica Hull, she ran 15 dead. She already had it, didn't she? And then she, won the national championship at Melbourne Track Classic.
It's not that quick, is it? It's not 15:05. It's a bit slower than that, I would have thought. But, yeah. But once again, I think if next year's national 5K, if the female that wins that and runs the qualifying time, they'll be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting time. See what happens. Next one, Brad. Then Scott's coming in.
Yeah, so next question is, hey, guys, had a listen to the latest podcast with Zach Bitter. Question in regards to time trials and PBs. Can you claim a PB on a certified 5K park run course that you have run solo? Forget the Garmin and Strava, just run from the marked start and finish points. Well, I've never heard of a certified parkrun course.
That is true. That is a good point, actually. You bring that actually that well.
What do you say, Moose?
Well, there's no PBs outside of a race, really, is there?
Well, yeah, that's the thing I said about this is because you can control what day you do it on, and you kind of, you know, you can get a bit lucky. Like I did the other day, I picked that day because I knew the weather was going to be perfect and had someone, he said he doesn't want to have a bike, does he? He said he was going to do it solo. But yeah, I think when you sign up for races, you're not sure what the weather's going to be.
That being said, and what I said, was it last week or the week before when we had sort of the same question, was if I went to the track one afternoon and I ran a 5K on the track, so I ran the 12 and a half laps and it was a PB for me, I wouldn't claim it as my PB, but next time I raced, I would have confidence that I could do it because I know that I've done it previously. So that's the benefit I would get from it, but I certainly wouldn't claim it as my PB.
You'd check with your parkrun too if they've measured it with a Garmin or put the wheel over it as well. I don't know how accurate some parkruns measure their courses.
So many of the parkrun courses though, like you're doing out and backs and it's a bit windy and it's very easy to cut like a meter or two here and there. So unless it was like a dead straight 2.5K one way, 2.5K back. A lot of the parkruns. Yeah. So a lot of the parkruns, it's very easy to just go onto the other side of the bike path and chop off a meter here or a meter there.
We'll do Alex's question next week. Moose on the loose, you got something quickly?
All right, Kyle Merber, funny man, tweet. As a cashier places my bananas on the scale, I go 4011 and wink. He's referring to the number that they press in when there's a fruit that comes up. He's shocked. I tell him, hard to believe, but I was once standing where you are. He says, no way. So I say, keep working hard. Study your PLUs. PLUs, and for the supermarket workers, that's the code. And maybe one day you'll be shopping for groceries too. Oh, what a guy. What a guy.
Ah, oh, Moose.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get Scott in here, eh, and talk about some stuff.
All right.
You get him in, start getting serious, boys, because this is the stuff where we've got to be able to read this stuff. He'll tell us who won last week, and then we'll go from there. Scott, I did tell him 8:20 this week. He thought he might have been getting to bed early, but didn't happen. See what happens. You been practicing your pronunciation, Brad?
I did have a bit of a crack at it today, yeah.
Yeah, I saw you on that file actually at about 11 o'clock just doing some research. Hey, Scott, thanks for joining us on Inside Run Podcast again.
Hey, boys, how are we?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, mate.
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. Just sitting in front of the fire, finished a glass of wine, all through the Tiger King, so life is good.
Oh, I've got one episode to go, Scott.
It is messed up.
That main character reminds me of Brad Croker a bit as well, I reckon.
That is. Let's just be clear, Moose. Like, there's nothing that's my country about the south of the U.S.
They are your people.
Oh, they are not my people.
Have you watched them, Moose?
A few episodes in. Fuck, it's funny.
Oh,
how good's the wedding?
It's worse.
The wedding.
The wedding's pretty good, but the episode that focuses on Doc Antle is just like, you're trying to decide who is the most messed up character of the three. And it is a tough competition right there.
It is. Another tough competition, Scott, is the Australian Distance Runner Best Performance of All Time competition. How's that for a segue? Do you want to go through the winners from last week first before we talk about who's going head-to-head this week?
Yeah, sounds good. So I'll go through the winners of those matchups and just kind of run through a couple of things as we go. So round one, matchup one, we had Herb Elliott winning the gold medal, breaking the world record in the 1500 meters in the Rome Olympics 1960, up against Brett Robinson's sub-60-minute half marathon earlier this year in Japan. Let's face it, that's a tough matchup for anyone at any level from any country And Herb Elliott is the winner of that one. Mm-hmm. So I think probably no surprises there. And that's not to take anything away from Robbo's run, because going under 60 minutes is no joke in a half marathon. And so props to him for doing that. But Herb Elliott, winner of that one. Matchup number two, we had TV Trevor Vincent against Yusuf Abdi, both steeplechasers. Pretty interesting matchup, actually. You know, on the surface, you've got, you know, Yusuf running 8:16 in an Olympic final in Beijing in 2008 and getting sixth place in arguably, you know, one of the stronger fields in any Olympics because of the Kenyan element in there. However, you got, if you really dig into this, it's pretty interesting because TV or Trevor, he wasn't the favorite. He's run on a 40-degree day in the first Commonwealth Games steeple ever held. And he broke his own Australian record by 6 seconds in that race. And if you really kind of want to dive farther into it, you go, well, Yusuf just missed Sean Crichton's Australian record. So you've got TV setting an Australian record, Yusuf just missing his. Technically, TV was closer to the world record time at the time. So he missed. He took the Australian record from 8:49 to 8:43. World record was 8:30.4 at that time. And, you know, you're 22 seconds away with Yusuf's time. So TV's actually got the win on that one. So really tough one. That's one of those ones where you kind of had to dig down a few layers. Mm-hmm. And Yusuf could have easily won that, but we're going to be. So, yeah, pretty good matchup. This next matchup probably created the most probably interesting debate. In the third matchup of the first round, you've got Al Lawrence winning a bronze medal in a 10,000-meter Olympic final, home Olympics, 1956 in Melbourne. Great race between Vladimir Kutz and Gordon Peary. Gordon Peary completely blows up, finishes in eighth place, and you've got Al Lawrence picking up scraps and getting third. So you go, man, that's pretty tough to beat. But you've got Graham Crouch, we're going to try to get the names right this week. That's one of the goals. Fifth place in a Commonwealth Games 1500, and you go, oh man, you've got to go with the bronze medal, right, in the Olympics for 10,000. But with Crouchy's 1500, I did some more digging on this, and last week I'd said that six out of the top eight were Olympic medalists. It's actually seven out of the top eight. So I'm going to run through, I'm probably going to spend a little bit of time, I'll just spend a couple of minutes on this one, because it's pretty damn interesting when it comes to history. So in that 74 Commonwealth Games final, I'm going to read you the top eight of how they finished. So you have first place, Philbert Bailly, broke the world record in that race. In 1980, he wins a silver medal in the steeplechase. Second place in the race, you've got the great John Walker, gold medalist, obviously, at 1576, first miler ever under 350, so also a world record holder. Third place, you got Ben Jipko, who was the silver medalist in the steeplechase in 1972, also the world record holder in the steeple from 73 to 75. Fourth place, you got the great Rod Dixon, bronze medal in the Olympic 1500, 1972, also won the New York City Marathon. So you got fifth place, you got Crouchy. Sixth place, Mike Boyd, bronze medalist, 800 meters, 1972 Olympics. Also a master later on, master's world record holder in the mile. When you're my age, you get into those things. Also ran 3:28 for a downhill mile in the 80s, which is pretty epic. Seventh place, Brendan Foster, bronze medal Olympics, 10,000 meters in 1976. Also 3,000 meter outdoor world record holder. Eighth place, Suleiman Nyambui, silver medal in the 1980 Olympic 5,000 meters, also world record holder, indoor 5,000 meters. So you got six of the top eight world record holders and seven of the top eight Olympic medalists. Like, name any race in history at any distance that has that depth of field. I don't think you could find one.
I watched this during the week, Scott, as well, and it was insane, like the early pace.
Oh, just completely getting after it from step one. just none of this, you know, oh, I shouldn't lead and I shouldn't do this. And it's just like, no, nah, it's just on from step one. So, yeah, absolutely amazing. So we got a bit of an upset here. We're going to go with Crouchy for the win here. Over an Olympic bronze medal.
How do you feel about that? Your mate Loro getting done.
Loro's gone and got himself a bronze medal in the Olympics, and he got done by some bloke who didn't even podium at the Con Games.
I know. Well, this is why we're doing this. It's about upsets, and it's about, you know, there's going to be people out there that might disagree with it on the surface, but at the end of the day, this is about whose performance on any given day is how it matches up other performance. And when you have to look at every single variable with every single matchup, and you go, on that day, you've probably got Crouchy, you know, in the medals in any significant race over 1500 meters in that era if he doesn't have 7 out of 8 Olympic finalists around him. So, you know, it's this is why we're doing this. It's not a perfect science, and there's going to be people that debate, you know, things, but oh well, that's what the committee went with. And you know, I kind of agree. Once you dig down on this, it's just an absolutely epic race. And at the time, Crouchy's run the 7th fastest time ever of all time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that one's that. Matchup 4, we've got Kate Anderson winning gold medal in the Commonwealth Games in KL in 1998 against Kat Bissett's Australian record, which is current at 158.78. We're going medals over time in this case, and we've got Kate Anderson for the win here. Again, a pretty close one, but yeah, we like gold medals. So we've got matchup number 5. We've got the great Derek Clayton running an unreal 208.34 in Antwerp in 1969, which is just crazy, against Kerry O'Brien's 4th place Olympic final 1968. Pretty hard to go against Derek Clayton again. 208 in 1969. I mean, I think we can all pretty comfortably say that that's pretty epic.
Yeah. Am I right in remembering, now this could be way off, but I think I remember when I read his book, he ran, this was in the afternoon, this race, and he ran like 10 miles in the morning?
Yeah, I don't remember that, but that sounds very Derek Clayton.
I think I had to read that several times before I kind of comprehended it.
It probably wasn't an easy 10 miles either.
Yeah.
So,
I hope that's right.
Anyone that gets the chance, grab his book. It's kind of like a training manual / biography, and there's just some really epic bits in there. It was kind of like he never really did workouts. He just basically ran everything flat out. So maybe don't use it as a training manual, but it's pretty interesting anyway. All right, so let's see. Matchup 6, we've got Eloise Wellings running 14:54.11 in Zurich in 2006, up against Tony Manning, gold medalist in the steeple in Edinburgh in 1970. Tony Manning wins this one. Again, we like gold medals here over times, but pretty interesting, like, you've got Kerry O'Brien was actually leading that race coming off the final water jump, and Kerry O'Brien fell. But you've got Tony Manning, essentially, he's beating the current world record holder, which was actually Kerry O'Brien. He's beat the Olympic champion, the reigning Olympic champion and silver medalist, and he's run a 9-second PB and run 8:26 in a championship final. Like, that is damn good. So, it's kind of like Lloydy when you think about, like, beating that class of field in the era that he did. Like, I was watching the race that you put up, Moose, on your Running Company Ballarat Facebook page with Lloydy's race, and absolutely epic. And I was kind of reading this thinking, pretty damn similar. So, and actually ended up winning this pretty easily. Like, I think he won it by 3 seconds or something like that, so...
I'll have to have a video of that one come through.
Yeah, it'd be a good one actually. Fine. So, all right, matchup 7, we have Noel Clough We had a bit of a had a bit of an issue with the old name last week, but we've got it sorted. So Noel Clough, for anyone out there who was curious. So him winning the gold medal Comm Games in Kingston, Jamaica, 1966, up against Stewie McSwain's Australian record just a couple of years ago. So, again, you know, this is one where we've got the gold medalist beating the Australian record holder, kind of similar theme. But it's pretty interesting with Noel. I mean, he set a Commonwealth Games record when he had that run. He PB'd by over a second, and he finished that year ranked fifth in the world. So, again, pretty tough to argue against that. So Noel is the winner of that one. And then the last matchup we did last week, we had Edwin Flack winning two gold medals in the same Olympics, the first Olympics, first modern Olympics in 1896 in Athens, up against Jackie Perkins' fifth place World Cross Country Championships in 1989. I think there's still only been maybe six Australians ever top 10 at World Cross, but pretty tough to, regardless of time and era, it's pretty hard to argue against a double Olympic gold medalist in the same Olympics. So we've got Edwin Flack winning that one. So that's last week's matchups anyway.
I'm learning some stuff here, fellas, and we're knocking out some current runners here, Scott, which is, that might cause a bit of controversy.
Yeah, that's always the challenge. Like, you know, you look at a perfect one is look at, you know, Trevor Vincent's steeple against Yusuf Steeple, and you go, you know, 8:16, you know, it's crazy to think that Beijing was 12 years ago, but you still would call that current era. And you go, you know, how can we put a guy that ran an 8:43 steeplechase in that race against, you know, ahead of a guy that ran 8:16? But that's not what this contest is about. I mean, if that was the case, every Australian record holder would probably be in the final four, you know, or the final eight.
Yeah, I think he explained it well. Like, giving us that context about the weather and how close it was to the world record at the time, like, all those things matter in this situation.
Yeah, definitely. And you got to step back into the era itself. And you go, if you listen to, you know, the banter, if they were on a podcast and Inside Running existed in 1962 or in 1974, and you guys were talking about a specific race, and then when we fast forwarded to a different era, you're like, well, what sounds more significant? People that were there, what was more significant at the time? And it's not always that clear cut. So
Let's talk about this week's head-to-heads, fellas. Let's go through this. I'll do the first one. Ron Clark, his world record of 13:16.6 for 5,000 metres at Stockholm in 1966. This is what the panel said about Ron's performance. So many to choose from. Clark had improved the record three times in 1965 before Keno claimed it at the end of that year with 13:24.2. Clark's 1966 response was definitive, taking 7.6 seconds off Keno's time and setting a record to last just over 6 years. And that's going up against Sarah Jamieson's Australian record at the time of 4:03 for 1,500 metres, also in Stockholm, but in 2006. This is what they said about this one. The Australian women's record for 1,500 metres has been edging towards sub 4 minutes for over 20 years. Sarah Jamieson took it into 4:00 territory at Stockholm's DN Games in 2006. She ran 4:03 for second behind Marion Yusuf Jamal's 3:58.96. It was a big year for Jamo. She got a silver medal in the Melbourne Commonwealth Games. She won a race in Osaka, New York and Madrid. She had high placings all over the place. At the end of it, she was ranked fifth in the world and followed up with a fourth place in 2007. That's a good
pretty. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty tough first round matchup there for Jamo, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And we'll get to results later, but one of the hard things with Ron Clark was, you know, when we were talking about this, do you choose his 5 or his 10? Because, you know, when he broke the 10K record a couple of times, but when he set it when he ran 27.39, he took 36 seconds off that record. So, you know, you could pretty much argue his 10K was just as good as his 5, but technically 13.16 is a little bit better than 27.39. So that's why that got the nod. I think 13.16 is worth something like 27.30 mid or 27.30 low. So we kind of went off the, you know, what the equivalency number would give on that one. But, you know, it's pretty interesting with Ron Clark. You've got a guy that set 12 world records in 18 races in 44 days. Anyway, have you guys happened to ever see any of his, specifically, have you guys ever seen the 1964 Olympic 5000?
I've seen photos of that because that's pretty famous, isn't it? One, right?
That's one where we've got to find on YouTube, and I'll send it to you, Moose. But he basically from the start is running 200 meters on, 200 meters off, and he does that for about 2/3 of the race. And when I'm saying on, I'm talking flat out sprint, literally jogging, and it's just bizarre. And you see the quality of, you know, the runner that he was, and the fact that he never won a championship gold medal. He's got 4 Commonwealth Games silvers and Olympic bronze in the 10,000 and 64. It's phenomenal that he didn't have a championship gold medal, and it's kind of unfortunate, but I also don't think it diminishes his impact on not just Australian distance running in history, but the world. I mean, he was so significant with what he did. He took the 5,000-meter world record ultimately from 13.34 down to 13.16. Like, that is ridiculous.
And still world class now.
Oh, absolutely. Anyone that goes and runs 13.16 or 27.39, I mean, you know, you're going to be talking about those people on the podcast.
Mm. Who you got, Brad? So, your mate next.
Yeah, next up is Sean Crichton, past guest, versus Dave Fitzsimmons. So Sean's result was his Australian record for the steeple, where he ran 8:16.22 in Lille in 1993. And this is what the panel have to say about it. 1993 was arguably Sean Crichton's best year. He made the final of the steeple at the World Championships in Stuttgart, was ranked in the event top 10 by Track and Field News magazine, and in his best performance of the year, set the current Australian record in a race in Lille, France. Crichton finished third in the race, hard on the heels of Kenya's Patrick Sang, now best known as coach of marathon world record holder Kipchoge. So another interesting stat, after Crichton broke the Australian record, he treated himself by going out and buying this fancy old-fashioned clock, which sits on his mantelpiece today. I thought that was quite interesting that he go and treat himself by buying a clock, but that's the type of guy Sean is.
Zach Croker adding some details too there.
Yeah, there you go.
That's not on my sheet.
So Fitzy's result was third place at the inaugural World Cup in Dusseldorf in 1977 in the 5,000 metres, where he ran 13.17.42. In that race, Yifta, Licori and Fitzsimmons fought it out over the closing stages. Neither of the other two could live with Yifta the shifter's kick, but Fitzsimmons 13.17.42 was the nearest approach any Australian had made to Ron Clark's national record of 16.6 in the intervening 11 years. So tough matchup there.
It is. And for those that don't know, the World Cup was essentially the world champs before they had the world champs. So it was a pretty significant meet, basically. So it's not just some random race called a World Cup. It was like everyone was there. So it was kind of a big deal at that time.
Moose?
Next one, Dixie Willis. Dixie Willis broke the world record in the 800/880-yard race in Perth, 1962. She ran 201.2 and 202 flat for the 880. Following the disappointment of the Rome Olympics, Dixie Willis bounced back with world records at 800 metres and 880 yards at the Western Australian Champs in Perth 62, with New Zealand's Maurice Chamberlain clinging to her heels. Willis went through the first lap in 59.4 and came home in 62.6 for a 2.02. And then Tamsin Lewis / Manu, gold medal 800 meters world indoor champs, Valencia 2008. Sometimes things just work out right for you. First day, you've got to be good enough to take advantage. Few, maybe none, expected Tamsin to win the 800 at the World Indoors, but she ran an astute race, taking the initiative off a slow pace, which dropped some of the more fancy chances. Then hanging in when passed just before the bell, running the final 200 of 28 seconds, Manu snatched the lead back from the line, meters back from the line, to claim the gold medal.
I remember that. That was a big shock, wasn't it?
Pretty big result. Was Seb Coe coaching her back then?
Oh, I've got no idea.
I know he coached her. I know he coached her at some point. So, anyway, just a bit of 800 meter history there. We're in the 800. So, you guys will see coming up for everyone listening. Like we're in the women's 800 meter section of the draw, and this just happened by chance. My daughter literally drew these names out of a hat.
He is pretty bizarre. Charlene Rendina. And this would have been hard to pick too. This is when I suppose you're talking about medals over times. Her gold medal performance at the Commonwealth Games in Christchurch in 1974. World records and games records were sprinkled through the Commonwealth middle and long distance events in Christchurch like confetti at a wedding. Whoever's written this has done a beautiful job, Scott. Charlene Rendina.
Shout out to Lem there.
Yeah, contributed her share of glitter, winning the 800 metres in a games record of 201.11. She also finished third in the 400 metres and helped her teammates to a silver medal in the 4x400 metre relay. 2 years later, she went on to set the national record of 159.0, which would not be bettered for over 43 years. That was when Katrina Bissett broke it last year. And she's going up against Judy Canton Peckham for another gold medal at a Commonwealth Games, this time at Edmonton in 1978. There wasn't much Judy Pollock didn't do in a career punctuated by the birth of her children. An Olympic bronze at 400 in 1964, world records at 800 metres / 880 yards in 1967, and finally sub 2 minutes in the biggest 800 of her career, the Montreal Olympics semi-final at the Olympic Games. Just past 36, running against Eastern Bloc opponents of dubious provenance, Pollock ran a PB of 2.00.66 in the heats and then 159.93 in her semi. Sadly, both she and teammate Charlene Rendina in the other semi finished fifth, missing the final by one place. How's that? They're running the same games and now they're up against each other this one.
Yeah, this is a tight matchup.
Yeah, well, gold medal against gold medal. Good luck with that, Brad.
Yep.
But then do you go down and have a look at Judy, who then also had an Olympic bronze medal to her name? And yeah, so it's
it gets really tricky if you start looking at the athlete's total body of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it gets too complex. It's literally one performance against one performance on that day.
Yeah.
But then we did make an exception and put Edwin Flash 2 gold medals in. So, anyway.
So, here's where you look at who they beat. And that's because, you know, obviously they've both won a gold medal in the same event. So, it's who they beat on the day. Is that how you judge that one?
Potentially. Who ran quicker, who they beat on the day, the circumstances involved. I mean, depends. I mean, some of these matchups are really easy. Like anyone sitting at home, even not knowing a whole lot. You know, with all due respect to Robbo, they probably know Herb Elliott's going to win that matchup.
Mm.
But, you know, you might have to dig down two layers or three layers or four layers or five layers. You know, you start to have to pick it apart if there's any doubt. And, you know, even sometimes then you're like, well, it's still pretty subjective. It probably makes it easier if they're in the same event, to be honest, because they might, you know, they're going to run similar times, but someone's run quicker, and maybe you can look at the conditions and all of that, but not over 800. It gets really tricky when you're talking a marathoner maybe against an 800 meter runner.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
We do our best.
Next matchup is Brenda Jones versus Dave Stevens. So Brenda Jones won the silver medal in the 800 metres at the Olympics in Rome in 1960. The 800 metres returned to the women's program 32 years after its debut in 1928. Dixie Willis was the more favoured Australian, but Jones emerged in magnificent manner at the Games, ultimately losing the final by 0.08 of a second to Lysenko of the Soviet Union. So that's a pretty good performance there from Brenda. As I said before, she's going up against Dave Stevens, who ran the world record for 6 miles in Melbourne in 1956, where he ran 27.54. So after a series of great races against the visiting Hungarians in late 1955, Dave Stevens kicked off Olympic year by breaking Emil Zatopek's world record for 6 miles. Running in the Victorian Championships at Olympic Park, Stevens recorded 27.54 to take just over 5 seconds off Zatopek's mark. Nicknamed the Flying Milko because he utilised a milkman's round as part of his training, running along behind the horse-drawn cart as he delivered the milk in the early dawn hours. Now, that is, Moose, you talk about being blue-collar. Dave is blue-collar.
That is it right there.
Yeah, I like the milkman.
Well, I mean, when you get into judging matchups, this is a hard one. So what would you guys choose, a silver medal in the Olympic final or a world record and breaking Emil Zatopek's world record?
Well, it's tough because you said all along you do like medals. So Based on the way we've been going, you'd go the silver, but then you look at whose world record he broke and it's, you know, Zatopek, and yeah, it's... I don't know. I'm glad I didn't have to make the call.
Yeah, well, I didn't either, so.
Not our job.
Yeah.
We just get trusted with reading it out. Go for it, Moose. Krishna, you interviewed her as well.
Krishna, yeah, she a former guest on the show. She ran eighth place at World Cross Country Champs, Warsaw, 1987. It's a toss-up which Stanton performance was better in 87, eighth in World Cross. Won by two-time champion Annette Sargent, or fourth in the 3000 at the World Indoors.
You got Bondarenko, Parisha, some epic names in that World Indoor too. So
they went with the cross country, in which the 20-year-old Stanton matched strides most of the way with a handful of the world's best female distance runners. At the time, only Deke, twice sixth, had done better in World Cross. So Krishna goes up against Jenny Orr. So in 72 at Munich Olympic Games, she ran an Australian record 4.08 in the 1500. No one quite knew what to expect from the women's 1500 at the Munich 1972 Olympics. It was the event's Olympic debut event. No one quite knew what to expect from Jenny Orr either, but she delivered an Australian record 4.08 in her heat, an almost identical 4.08 in the semi-final, and then eighth in the final in 4.12. Her record was to stand unbroken for more than 24 years. Orr was one of the women's pioneers, as significant in women's events as the likes of Flack in men's and Blake. Yep, so that's another tough one.
It is a tough one. I mean, World Cross, man, World Cross in that era, though, that was pretty epic back then. And, I mean, like, six Australians ever top 10 at World Cross. I mean, that's a pretty elite company to kind of, a pretty elite group of people and names to be in.
Second last one for the night. Bill Scott ran 28.18 for 10,000 metres at Box Hill in 1974. Ron Clark ran his first world record of 28.15 for 10,000 metres in 1963, in the 1963 Zatopek race. It took another 11 years before any other Australian approached that time. Bill Scott ran 28.18 in a solo performance at Melbourne's Box Hill Athletics Track. Clarkey had meantime ran at 27.39 in Europe, but Scott's performance pulled Australian distance running back to Clark's level of performances at a domestic level, at least. Scotty led the resurgence here from 1974, Chris Wardlaw wrote, Weeks later, Scott ran 13:28, his first time sub 13:30 since Clark, and 28:01 the following year, 28:01 in Europe. Thwarted by injury in 1976, he finished ninth in the Moscow 1980 Olympic Games 10,000 metres. And a trivia note here, Scott held the track record at Box Hill until Stewie broke it in 27:23 in last year's Zatopek. So Zatopek was once at Box Hill before this last year.
Obviously. Yeah, pretty interesting. Like, this is one of those where if you didn't really understand the context of it, and I really didn't, like, because I didn't grow up here, it was funny because I was actually living in Sydney at that time. I was born in Sydney, even though it doesn't sound like it. How the panel talked about that race and the importance of that race. The importance of that race is, if you look at someone running 28:18, you'd go, yeah, that's a solid 10. That's a really nice 10. But the significance of what it did in bringing Australian 10,000 meter running and distance running in general kind of up to speed and kind of, out of the Ron Clark used to be amazing era into, hey, we're really good now. The significance of that is worth more than that time. And that's one thing I really learned from the panel and how they talked about this race, because I thought for sure this was a given win for the person he's up against, and it wasn't. It didn't kind of come out like that. We won't get into results now, but there was a lot more debate about this, and you would think on the surface.
Up against Darren Wilson and his 60 minutes and 2 seconds world best half marathon in Tokyo in 1997. The variability of road race courses make performances on the original Tokyo half marathon course difficult to assess. Basically, it was the first half of the Tokyo marathon course and had an overall drop of 33 metres. Ineligible for current record consideration then, fortunately, Steve Monteghetti had benchmarked the course with world bests of 60:27 and 60:06. Darren Wilson ran 4 seconds quicker than Mona then, and in the same major international race. Enough is said. Yeah, it's pretty quick, isn't it?
And it's a good matchup. Like, it's one of those where, it's not this, two super obvious guys running Olympic finals, winning gold medals, etc., or breaking a world record. It's like two really, really, really solid guys doing. This is where I think the history is really cool, because you're going to learn when we get into results, you're going to learn a little bit more about these as well, which is what this is all about. So,
And Brad, the last one, marathon boys.
Yeah, the last matchup is Deke versus Michael Shelley. So for Deke, they've chosen his best performance to be the gold medal at the 1982 Brisbane Commonwealth Games, where he ran 2:09.18. He had run faster before, so he'd run 2:08.18 for a world record in Fukuoka in 1981, and afterwards he ran 2:07.51 in Boston in 1986. But Deke's gold medal run, watched by millions of Australians over breakfast, and the back-and-forth battle with Ikenga over the closing stages by the Brisbane River is arguably his most famous run. So he goes up against Michael Shelley, and they chose his gold medal from the Glasgow Commonwealth Games in 2014 to be his best performance. With 5 kilometres to run in the Glasgow 2014 Commonwealth Games marathon, Michael Shelley entered new territory. He'd been to that point before, but usually struggled to finish on. This time was different. Working on strategies he developed with coach Dick Telford, Shelley surged into the lead, running away from a pack of fast marathoners. Silver medalist Stephen Chemlaney had run 2:06.24 earlier in the year. So Shelley won that by 43 seconds. You just try to run the best you possibly can. It was a dream, to be honest. I'm still buzzing, he said. We all were. So tough Shelley, phenomenal athlete, but tough up against, man. Deke.
the hardest thing with Deke, he's also won he won the first world championship in 1983 in Helsinki. Mm-hmm. I mean, he won Rotterdam as well. Like, this is one of those where I'm like, I I think his 207.51, his world champs win, and common games, I actually probably almost would say all of those are equal.
I
don't know. How do you choose one? But I think running 209 in Brisbane in a home Commonwealth Games against a conga, like watching that the other day, again, Moose, you putting that up, like that was absolutely epic. I mean, anyone that's into running, you know, go on to the Running Company Ballarat's Facebook page and watch the last several minutes of that race. If you have the most important stuff to do in the day, you're not going to get up and do it. You're going to watch the rest of that. It's that good.
And the best thing is the clock's not on it, but you see him charging and you're like, this guy's going fucking fast. And it turns out he was going real fast.
And the crowd's like right on top of him. The crowd's going bananas. Like it just looks like the most epic stage, you know. And none of those people know the result as they're watching it. So you kind of like wind yourself back in that era and just go, imagine being there on that course close to the finish and like seeing these two guys basically have a punch up during the marathon, like, you know, with what they're doing to each other. It's phenomenal. Anyone should watch that. It's a fan of distance running, period.
100%. And when you look at here, like, I know the competition's not about an athlete's body of work, but when you read out what Deke has done, and when you consider it's over the marathon, which, you know, as we know, the marathon is an event that it's hard to get right all the time, but he seemed to always get it right. So it's it's phenomenal what he was able to do.
Yeah, unparalleled, to be honest. Like when it comes to that level of, you know, there's. You're talking, you know, what, Moniz, you're talking, you know, Mottram, Ron Clark, Herb Elliott. There's just a handful of people that are kind of unparalleled. Not that we're giving too much away here, but.
We'll see what happens in the next coming weeks. Thanks again, Scott, for your time.
No, thanks again for having me. And Making it easy for us. If you have me back, I'm always happy to come back and talk about this stuff. I love it, so.
Monday nights, lock them in for the next couple of weeks.
All right, I'm in.
Thanks, Scott.
You guys have a good one. We'll catch you soon.
See you, mate. See
ya. Cheers, boys.
All right, boys, end of the show. What's coming up, Moose?
Mike, I'm going to do workouts this week. So I think I'm going to do one tomorrow. And I'm going to go back to the old heart rate trick, keep myself in check a little more. So I'm going to do a threshold to heart rate, just so I don't cook myself and so I don't dread it and put myself in a hole early like I have been doing with all the workouts. Got to get back to enjoying the running again, I reckon.
Good plan. Bradley, what are you doing?
Going to work tomorrow for my one day of the week before we are going to school holidays. And, recovery week training-wise. So probably just about somewhere between 120 and 130K this week.
Very good. Sounds good. School going to go back when ACT finished for holidays?
No, I think the school's planning on having everything online for term two and then hopefully be back for term three. But because the school's not shut, there'll still be some students there. So hopefully I'll still get the odd day next term, but we'll see.
Get me the money. All right, boys, we're done. Wherever you listen to this podcast, you'll be you might have an interview coming at you. You might not, depending on where you listen to it. And we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
See you guys. Yeah.